love has flown. Take the day off, throw yourself a bone. Say, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing. See if you remember when you forgot the clock and called a friend, heard the rush of the river, felt the fly rod bend. Say, I'm going fishing. What I've been told, a day on the water is good for the soul. So head on down to the fishing hole and say, I'm going fishing. Got time for the business and time for the phone, till the time for the things that you love has flown. Take the day off, throw yourself a bone. Say, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing. Folks say this plan won't make me rich, and those who do it must be titched, but it's the river or the rat race, you pick which. Me? I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing, I'm going fishing.
And that fishing song is going to get us started on an interview with some members of the Columbia Green chapter of Trout Unlimited. Some people may wonder what trout fishing has to do with sustainability, but if you think about it, fish need clean water just as much as humans do. And as you'll learn from today's interview, Trout Unlimited is not just an organization that is focused on fishing. It is a conservation organization, it's a national organization, and it is concerned with maintaining and restoring the integrity of our streams. Trout Unlimited nationally works to protect streams and their watersheds in a number of ways. They work to remove barriers to fish migration, such as dams, diversions, and dry stream beds. They work to restore degraded streams and to sustain these efforts and assure their success through education and fundraising. And I was recently fortunate to sit down with members of the Columbia Green chapter of Trout Unlimited to discuss their efforts on a local level. So today we'll hear that interview, and of course with a couple fishing songs thrown in for good measure.
My name is Vincent DuBois. I'm the president of the Columbia Green chapter of Trout Unlimited.
My name is Hank Thies, and I'm the former president of Trout Unlimited. I live in Claverick, and I've been a member since 1996.
Hi everyone, my name is Fran Martino. I live in the village of Philmont near the Agawamic and Clover Creeks, and I am a member of Trout Unlimited, and I also head up the Greater Stockport Creek Watershed Alliance.
Terrific, and I'm Liz Lowe Judas, and I am the coordinator of the Catskill Creek Watershed Awareness Project. Let's talk a little bit about Trout Unlimited on a national level.
Well, Trout Unlimited was formed by a group of sportsmen back in 1959 while they were sitting around a campfire out there in on the Au Sable River in Michigan. And the main focus of Trout Unlimited on a national level is to protect and reconnect and restore our waterways. And by protecting the headwaters, they believe that the downstream waters can be then reconnected and restored through the various projects that Trout Unlimited sponsors nationwide. There's about 400 chapters in the United States, and those 400 chapters have put forth over 500,000 hours of volunteer work to do stream cleanup and stream restoration. I think that to sum up the mission statement of Trout Unlimited on a national level, it's the fundamental truth about rivers and streams. What happens upstream is going to eventually flow downstream. And TU is working to make America's waterways cleaner and healthier and more fishable.
If we look on our Trout Unlimited card that we get sent when we join Trout Unlimited, it actually says that our mission is to conserve, protect, restore North Americans' cold water fisheries and their watersheds.
Hank, do you want to talk a little bit about the Columbia Green Trout Unlimited chapter and what you guys do?
Yeah, I got involved with Trout Unlimited, and at the time that I did, there were about 45 members in Green County, Columbia Green Trout Unlimited, and there were probably only about 10 active members. And after a year or two, it seemed like we weren't involved in a lot of projects, we weren't doing an awful lot at our meetings, and we actually, the person that was president before me, decided that what we should do is dissolve our chapter and go in with some other group. And about four of us that are still involved in Trout Unlimited group now decided we really didn't want that to happen. And we kind of, the four people getting together and trying to push to get people to take positions in the being president, vice president, and secretary and treasurer, we were able to accomplish that. And we actually went from about 45 members to now about 130 members. Now, granted, we had four active members, very active members at that time. Now we've got 40 or 45 real active members. So it's been important that we were able to get a lot of people involved. And one of the things that we did, which I think brought a lot of us together, was we got involved in a restoration project on the 10 Mile Creek, and it really brought a lot of people into our Trout Unlimited group that worked real hard.
So the 10 Mile Creek is located, flows out of the hamlet of Rensselaerville, and it flows into the Catskill Creek right near Oak Hill. And can you talk about what a creek restoration is, what that means?
Well, let me back up just a little bit and tell you how I got convinced that we should get involved in it. A fellow that lives right on the 10 Mile Creek named Walt Bennett spoke to me about, why don't we help do something where we take some of the trees that were down in the stream and take them out of the stream and redo some of the weirs, some of the waterfall, small waterfall type areas that were put in by the DEC way back in the 60s and 70s. And there were a lot of pieces of hemlock that were put across the streams, and they were washed out over the years. They probably lasted 50 years, but at the point that I got involved, there weren't too many of these structures left. So basically what was done is with the help of, or with the encouragement of Walt Bennett, and then with the help of several other people or several other organizations, for example, Green County Soil and Water, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the Town of Durham, and of course the State Trout Unlimited and National Trout Unlimited, all enabled us to do this project. And with the help of Bob Novak, who wrote the grant for us, we received an Embrace a Stream grant from Trout Unlimited National, and that really enabled us to put money into the use of Green County Soil and Water and U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the members themselves with planting trees after a lot of this work was done. But what the major part of the project involved was Volkswagen-sized boulders being put in the stream to form areas where there was tiny dams or weirs put in the stream to oxygenate the water and make water more suitable for the insect life as well as the trout.
Do you know how that creek is doing since Tropical Storm Irene and Lee?
It amazed me. I was on it last year, and it really survived tremendously.
It really goes to show and prove that stream restorations are really good for the streams. After this hurricane that we had with Irene and Lee, the high water at these restorations, they held their own, and very little damage to these restorations. A lot of people don't believe in the restoration type work, and they kind of say it's a waste of money and stuff like that. But with after this 500-year storm that we had, a 1,000-year storm, whatever way you want to call it, these restorations really held their own. And it goes to prove if the restorations are done and done properly, it's really good for the streams and for the fish and the insects. And as long as we give life to the streams will give life back to everybody, everything that depends upon the streams.
And I think it's a good point that many people don't understand that streams have been altered in the past by human behavior. Sometimes people have the perception that a lot of our natural world has been untouched by people. And sometimes with stream restoration, what we're trying to do is put things back to a more natural order because it had been previously changed by people.
Yes.
I wanted to move on to talk a little bit about some other accomplishments of the Columbia Green chapter in addition to the 10-mile creek restoration and some of the activities that you guys are involved with.
We spend a lot of time trying to help the DEC in transporting fish and bringing them to the different streams. And in Columbia County, we stock the Kinderhook, the Klaverick, the Taconic, Rojan, the Queechee Lake, Orpit Pond, Weed Mines Pond. In Greene County, we stock Schoharie Creek, Basic Creek, Batavia Kill, Catterskill, Catskill, Eastkill, Westkill, and both Greens and Colgate Lakes. And you may have noticed I've mentioned an awful lot of kills, and I kind of came across something that said, this is a little note, the names come from the Dutch language where kill is the word for stream.
The Trout Unlimited sponsors Trout in the Classroom, and we have it in Columbia County, and we also have them in Greene County. It's a good way for the kids to learn about trout. They get their eggs, trout eggs, in the fall, and they hatch them out. They bring them back to the classroom, hatch them out, and let them grow into the spring, and then they get together and go out and put them out to the stream. Basically around May is when they most of them all put their fries into the stream. Then we do stream cleanups. We pick different streams in the spring, and we go and go out and pick everything out of the streams that's not supposed to be there. Car tires, wheels, motorcycles, snowmobiles, all kinds of garbage, tin cans, bottles, mattresses. There's a lot of stuff that comes out of the stream. And don't know how it gets there, but it gets there. And talking about stream cleanups, we're going to, after this flood that happened here in the Catskills, we're looking to do some stream cleanups on the Batavia Kill. That was really hit really bad. And whatever other streams, the Schoharie, the Catskill Creek. And we're just going to find out what date it's going to be. Then we'll announce it. And we'll be into the newspaper. And it'll be on our website when we're going to be doing the stream cleanups. And we might need to ask for assistance from other agencies and Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. We have to analyze what all needs to be done, because it's I know the Batavia Kill was really hit pretty hard with all the debris. So that's the thing we're going to be looking forward to this spring. The other thing we do is plant trees, and one of the places, one of the things we assist with is planting trees of the Trees for Tribs program, which is the Hudson River Estuary program. And we look for places to plant the trees, and we notify the people that's in charge of the Trees for the Tribs, DEC people, and we let them know where things need to be planted. And we do tree planting to help hold the banks of the streams that has been damaged or set back. And there's a lot of places where the Trees for Trib program comes in to help cool the water for the trout. The trout like cold water. So we try to plant as close as we can to the streams in good places, so it will help cool shade the water, so the trout will have nice clean water. The other thing we do is we teach fly tying. When we get enough people that would like to take the fly tying class, normally we go through the Columbia Green Community College, and they set it up for us, and then we announce when the dates for the fly tying course. And it's usually like a six-week course, and it's pretty good. We got some pretty good fly tiers in the chapter. The other thing that's coming up is the fly fishing class that's going to be held at the Columbia Green Community College starting from February 29th through April 4th. And the classes are Wednesday evenings from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And you can get a hold of the college website. It will be on their website, and to see enroll and to see what the course will be.
I'm hoping that some of the children that have participated in Trout in the Classroom will eventually become of age where they'll be interested in taking one of the fly tying or the fly fishing course. By starting out children at a young age, and in certain cases I've seen Trout in the Classroom in grade levels of, third and fourth grade students who really become involved in and start to develop a really great sense of stewardship by taking care of these little fish that are in this tank in their classroom. And it's just, first thing, as soon as they hit the door of that classroom, they're right to the fish tank, and they check on the fish eggs. Has anything moved, or has anything hatched? And it's a real sense of excitement, and it's a sense of ownership that, they're raising these little eggs to become a fish that is going to get put into a stream nearby their school. And I've been out with these children as they release those tiny little fry into the streams, and it's almost like it is a sense of ownership. That's my fish. He's going to grow up to be a really great rainbow or a really great brown or whatever species it is. But starting them out as young as we can and getting into the minds of our children that this is our earth, and it's here, and we're only here once, and to instill in them a sense of stewardship is one of the things that TU does a really great job at.
We actually have a scholarship that is called the Jack Smith Scholarship, and this is for the fly fishing and fly casting course, and we give it to a student, I believe it's from anywhere from the age of 12 to 17, so that's something to keep in mind.
The other thing I like to bring up is about some of the stuff that we do in the chapter is we support the Wounded Warrior Program, and I have done it for the past 3 years, have worked with the Adaptive Sports Foundation here in Windham, and they get a hold of the contact for the Wounded Warriors, and then they bring them up to this area, and we take them out on the stream to teach them how to fly fish and to fly cast, and have a really good time with those guys. Really respect them, all what they've gone through, and they thank us when we really need to thank them for the work that they've done. It gets really touching when you've been able to help somebody that's been wounded from the war, whether it's physical or psychologically. It's very touching, and I'm proud that we really do that. TU National works with Project Healing Waters. It's with the Wounded Warriors. It's a different program than I just said what I do. One of mine is Project Odyssey is what we work through. And Healing Waters is, they just did a program last year down at the Livingston Manor at the Fly Fishing Museum. It's a great place to visit. That's to see the Fly Fishing Museum. And talking about that, the history of fly fishing in this country started here in the Catskills. So it's really something to be proud of, that something started here in this country came from this area. The other thing that we support is Casting for Recovery. And it's ladies with recovering from breast cancer, and we tie flies and send them the flies. We help assist them at their fly fishing camps. Usually they take the ladies and have a weekend, and men just come in on Sunday to help them fish and casting. They just try to help assist them on the streams. Another one is Reeling for Recovery, and that's for men with prostate cancer. Some of this is supported by TU National, and some of it's not. Some of it's just local chapters supporting, like, Reeling for Recovery.
I just wanted to ask a question, too, about fly tying itself. Could somebody talk about what fly tying is?
Typically, the bugs are mayflies, stoneflies, and caddisflies that they're trying to mimic by building this little creature that's made out of bear fur and turkey feathers and all kinds of ingredients. Mm-hmm. They actually call it a recipe. Mm-hmm. They have a recipe for a fly. And they refer to these flies as dry flies and wet flies. And when they talk dry and wet flies, we're talking about the wet fly being in the nymph stage or the larval stage, is still living in the streams. And then when it emerges out of the water, it becomes the flying insect, and then we call it the dry fly. But you know, these fly fishermen, they have strange names for all these flies. What I call a caddisfly or a mayfly, they're talking green drakes and rabbit things, and I don't even know what words they talk about when they refer to the flies that they tie, and I have to stop and ask, so do you mean a mayfly? Is that what you're talking about? But knowing the anatomy of these tiny little insects is really... it really takes some study, and being out there on the stream and doing what fly fishermen will say, we're going to match the hatch today, and that's what they're doing. They go out to the stream and they're seeing, you know, what's just hatch, what's flying around, what's the bug that's making all the fish in the stream happy to jump out of the stream and grab onto one of them. So they'll tie a fly or use one that they've already tied to match that hatch, and hopefully their chances of catching a trout is going to be better when they replicate whatever the hatch is that day. But it's definitely a different vocabulary, let me tell you.
So there's the art of actually tying the fly to look like the insect that you're trying to mimic. Then there's the skill of knowing what's emerging once you get to the stream. And then there's the skill of being able to mimic the movement of that particular insect as you fish. Mm-hmm. So not just sitting by the stream.
No.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Acra. I'm Liz Lojudis, the host of Living Lightly on the Land. And today we're listening to an interview with members of the Columbia Green chapter of Trout Unlimited. And we will pause for a brief musical interlude. And this is the song Hook and Line, performed by Artie Traum and his crew.
I got a hook and I got a line. I got a little girl I call mine. Took her fishing the other day. She got a fish, but it got away. Thank you.
Fran, you and I are both coordinators of watershed groups, and our purpose in watershed protection is to help keep our water clean. And one of the ways that, one of the indicators of clean water are aquatic insects. And I know that's also an interest of Trout Unlimited, is having a healthy population of aquatic insects to feed the fish. But can you talk just a little bit about how aquatic insects indicate good water quality?
Aquatic insects are what we refer to as an indicator species of good water quality. Certain insects can tolerate high levels of pollution, whereas others are very sensitive to those levels. For example, just within the caddisfly families, there are certain caddisflies that can withstand high water temperatures, while others are preferring to be in cooler water temperatures. Some of the insects, right down to the family level, have a distinct difference in what they can tolerate as far as oxygen levels. And when we go into the streams and find these different insects, and in fact the more diversity of insects we find in a stream, it helps us understand that the water quality is such that it can support a good level of diversity, and that the water quality is clean enough to support such a population.
So if folks learn how to identify aquatic insects, they can actually start to analyze how clean the water is in a stream that flows near their house by recognizing the insects that live there.
Absolutely. Just by going into the stream and picking up a few rocks and looking for a few different types of insects and knowing what to look for in the body shape of the insect. And these insects that we're finding, by the way, are aquatic insects that spend the majority of their life in the water until they come out of their larval stage and pupate into a terrestrial insect that then develops wings and flies away. So water is really their home for quite a number of years, some of them. And when they become a flying insect, in some cases the insect only lives maybe a couple of days or even a couple of weeks. So water is really the environment that they're involved with for the majority of their life span.
I feel like it's real interesting to be involved with entomology and study of the insects. And I think that's one thing that scared me away from being a fly fisherman, because I always enjoyed fishing and fish with a worm or a spinner or a minnow or something. And when I was asked, do I want to try to learn how to fly fish, I said, I don't know these Latin names and I'm not going to be able to handle this stuff. I don't want anything to do with fly fishing. And then a friend of mine who most of our people know, John Leebrook, said, Coach, you got to come out and fly fish with me. And I finally, after a little bit of coaxing, did, and I put my spinning rod in the closet, and I have not picked it up except to use it with my grandkids. And I love fly fishing and will always try to learn more about entomology.
What conditions do trout need to survive and to spawn in our streams?
Good, clean, cold water.
And water that has a good oxygen level. For spawning, for trout spawning, the oxygen needs to be up around the 7 parts per million range. And just for trout to survive and be happy trout, they need around a 6 parts per million. Some of the waters that we've been testing in both the Catskill and Stockport Creek watersheds have lower levels of oxygen. In fact, there was one stream that had been a trout stocking stream, one of the usual spots they were putting trout in, through the DEC trout stocking program. And through the discovery of the oxygen levels being extremely low and the water temperatures being extremely high, they decided not to stock that stream anymore because it's just not supporting the fry that were being put in there. Another thing trout need for survival is, as Vinny said, good low water temperatures. So when water temperatures get higher, the trout are going to either find a place that is more comfortable to them, or if they're not going to survive.
So colder water holds more oxygen, mm-hmm. and you were mentioning tree planting, and trees on our stream banks help to shade the water and mm-hmm. keep the water colder. So deforestation near stream banks is one threat to clean water and to habitat for trout.
Right.
Would you like to talk a little bit about other threats that Trout Unlimited recognizes to our clean water?
One of the things is silt in the water. When the streams erode, the sedimentation will go down and it will smother the eggs, will smother insects. And with that filling in, the sedimentation, like I said, it kills a spawning spot where you would have the reds. Reds are the name of the nest of the trout, all fish, they call them reds, where they lay their eggs. And you'll spot them in ponds, lakes, and the streams. And like I said, once that's covered, they won't come back to their spawning grounds. The other thing is that you get this high flashy water from these floods. They push so much mud off those banks and down over your eggs that's already been laid in the spring. And in the fall, too. And your insects will be smothered. It will kill off the insects. And that's one of the things, why we try to do stream restoration, to stop the silt from going into the streams and to minimize it as much as we possibly can, because it just kills everything. And it just stands the reason you're smothering it. You're taking the air away from it. And if you don't have air, and the water to work together, you know, you take that away, you're not going to have life. So,
another name for some of the things that is detrimental to the fish in the streams is Didymo, and it has a not such a sophisticated nickname of rock snot, and it's the algae that hangs on the rocks and is transported from stream to stream. And one of the things that has been done all over the country is a big push has been changing from a felt-soled shoe, wading shoe, to a rubber-soled shoe. And some of the companies are only selling the new rubber-soled shoes because they can be washed much easier, and this Didymo would not be transferred from one stream to the other. And this is happening all over the country, even out west is... It's a big problem.
And Didymo is considered an invasive species of plant. It's not native to our area of the world. And I know that it's been found in the Esopus. Mm-hmm. Is anyone aware of any other streams in our region where it's been discovered?
Yeah, the Battenkill, the Roundout. The Roundout was right after they found out it was in the Esopus.
Okay.
And the Battenkill is over in Vermont, New York State borderline.
But I wonder, Vinny, if you might speak about what TU is doing, or how does TU view the Marcellus Shale drilling that is being proposed?
Well, they're not opposed to drilling. What they are concerned about is what's going to happen with the water. They have to use water to do the drilling. They have to go pick out, they get the water from the streams. They were informed that they have to use about 1 million gallons a day to drill these wells. And our concerns are what happens with all that water that's being taken from the streams. And it leaves the fish high and dry because they're taken out of small brooks. And the trout have already laid their eggs for the spring hatch. They are afraid that they're going to leave those beds high and dry, and it's going to kill off these trout. After they take the water out of there, and then they take it to where they're going to drill the wells, they're drilling the wells with it, that's mixed with chemicals, and all that comes back out of it goes in to fracture the shale, and it's coming right back out, and they've got to take that wastewater and put it somewhere. And they've been making holding ponds and holding tanks, and we're very concerned about the holding ponds, because if they leak, they spring a leak, they're going to go right back into our water system, and right back, most of the times these are like on hills, and all the runoff that will come from those will go right back in and pollute the streams. The other thing we're concerned about is drilling the water, hurting the wells of the people that live in those areas. There's been all different stories about what has happened, and some people will turn around and take and turn their faucet on and put a match to it, and the water lights. And it's like, it's not safe water to drink. And, you know, with these chemicals, how much of those chemicals are going to go into those aquifers for the homeowners? So we're like I said, we're concerned about what's happening with all the water in the groundwater. That groundwater does eventually go to streams. And if they can't break up those chemicals, maybe those chemicals would get back into our streams. And it's something that doesn't look too good. Like I said, we're not against the drilling. We just want them to find a safe way to do this. It's the only way to do it.
I know there's been a lot of talk about the economics of drilling, but I think what sometimes people might not know is that the three states that are in the area where Marcellus Shale is located, the three largest states, is West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and of course New York. And we have to really stop and remember that according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, more than $8.4 billion in revenue is generated from those who use the resources of those three states to hunt or to fish or to do some other type of outdoor recreation. And if we put any of those outdoor recreations in jeopardy, you know, that's going to cost in several billions of dollars to those states that depend on people to come to the Catskills for a fishing trip. These resources and these historic trout fisheries really do need to have some protection and some attention paid to them. Speaking of keeping our eyes on the streams, both of the watersheds that Liz and I are involved with, the Stockport Creek watershed and the Catskill Creek watershed, are always seeking more volunteers, stream spotters, to come out on a regular routine basis to take a look at the physical aspects of the stream to see if there's any changes as a result of a storm occurrence, and to take water quality samples to test for the amount of oxygen levels that are in the water, the pH levels, nitrates, phosphates, and a variety of other chemical-type components that are found in our water systems. This can really tell us a lot about the health of the water and whether or not it can still support the animal life that depend on clean water for their existence. So if you're interested in becoming involved as a stream spotter, and many of our Trout Unlimited members are stream spotters for us in the Stockport Creek watershed, because these are the guys who are out there all the time on the stream. They're out there fishing, and while they're there, they can drop a thermometer in the water and take the temperatures, and this kind of information helps us see trends. It helps establish a good database so that we have some historical data about these streams. And again, we can continue to keep an eye on things and note when there are irregularities that we might find out there.
Now, I know that you guys have events, you have regular meetings, and you have events that
that you'd like people to be aware of, and hopefully some people will come out and join Trout Unlimited. So would you like to speak briefly about monthly meetings and your upcoming conservation dinner?
We have a monthly meeting. It's the third Tuesday of the month at 7 p.m., and we meet at Crosswinds in Hudson, New York on Harry Howard Avenue. It's basically right across from the fireman's home. It's a new housing complex, and we use their meeting room there for our meeting. And we offer, we have different speakers coming in. We have different programs that at our meetings, not every meeting, but most of the meetings, we always have somebody as a presenter, and they have some pretty good information about either fishing or about the rivers or something that's pertaining to the outdoors.
At the upcoming meeting in February, for example, Dan Miller will be joining us. Dan is the Habitat Restoration Coordinator from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and he'll be giving a very interesting presentation about the habitat restoration along the Hudson River, but also its tributaries. And he's got some really interesting maps that show you the shoreline of the Hudson River from 150 years ago compared to what it looks like today. And it's just really phenomenal to see how things have changed out there and what the plan is to help to restore some of these portions of the river that are currently choked up with Trapinatus, which is the water chestnut that grows in certain areas along the river and just locks it all up. So the meetings are open to the public, and anyone is welcome to join in and see that presentation by Dan Miller from DEC's Hudson River Estuary Program. Another thing coming up for our chapter is our annual conservation dinner. And this year we have a really exciting evening planned. The night before trout season opens on April 1st, so we better make it early night, get to bed early. Saturday, March 31st is when our conservation dinner will be held at 6 o'clock at Red's Restaurant, located just off of Thruway Exit 21B. The exact address is 12005 Route 9W in West Coxsackie. We'd love to have you come and join us for a real fun-filled evening. If you're interested in obtaining a ticket, you can make a reservation by calling 758-7367. Ask for Steve. Steve Mateki is our past president, who is taken the responsibility of gearing up the event this year. So, again, that number is 758-7367, and the date is Saturday, March 31st, 6 o'clock over at Red's.
We're going to be doing some fly tying at L.L. Bean on March 16th up in Albany. L.L. Bean donates to our chapter for the conservation dinner, prizes to the dinner. And we go to, a group of us will go up to L.L. Bean to tie when they have their outdoor days or whatever it's called. And we go up and tie for maybe about 4 or 5 hours to support them because they support us.
And when I was president of TU, Trout Unlimited, L.L. Bean actually threw Trout Unlimited, donated on 2 occasions, 6 rods on 1 occasion, and 2 years later, 6 more rods. So the rods we use in our fly casting classes are L.L. Bean rods that were donated by L.L. Bean. So we owe them to go up and do some fly tying for them to return the favor.
Right. One of the other things I'd like to mention is basically through Trout in the Classroom, and we were invited last year to the Gilboa Conesville High School to help the kids learn how to cast fly rods. And they make it a week-long trout awareness. They do it before the opener, trout opener, before April 1st. And they also do Trout in a Classroom, and we had people tying flies to show the kids, younger kids, how flies are tied, and they also showed a video called The Way of the Trout, and it tells about the whole life of the cycle of the trout. And we were taking the high school class into the gymnasium and teaching them how to cast fly rods. And one of the things was happening was L.L. Bean donated 4 fly fishing outfits to the school. And when I was helping the gym teacher unwrap the fly rods, one of the kids came up and asked if they were going to have a fly fishing club. And I said, sure you are. And they couldn't wait for us to come there to help show them how to cast fly rods. They kept begging the teachers, when are they coming? When are they coming? You know? And so we finally got there, and we were accepted with open arms. And I was really surprised from these young teens into older teens, how well they were to accept us. You know, a lot of kids are, you know, it's kind of, they're downplayed, but these kids were exceptional. You know, I want to go back. So I had such a good time with the kids and such, you know, fun. And like I said, they were there with open arms. And after this flood event, a lot of those kids are from Prattsville that go to that school. So I'm kind of in support of them because of what has happened to their homes up there. And I got an email to get donations from L.L. Bean. L.L. Bean gets in contact with TU National, and it was sent to me asking if we are looking to for rod outfits to support youth programs or for fundraisers. And I put in for our fundraising or for our conservation dinner. And then right after I did that, I had to tell them what the story that I just told about L.L. Bean donated 4 rods to those kids up there at that school. And I just let them know at TU National and L.L. Bean, whoever was going to receive this email, that these kids have gone through a very large devastation in their life. And I hope that, you know, they would consider donating more rods so these kids could have a fly fishing club. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. But I'm just asking for them, consider those kids, because they don't have anything up there. I mean, their lives were destroyed. It's wherever we can help, we try to help. It's the only thing that we can do.
Does anybody have anything that they'd like to add?
I just want to remind everyone that we have a fly fishing class that begins on February 29th over at Columbia Green Community College. So if you're interested in joining up, you can find the enrollment information on the Columbia Green Community College's website and enroll online.
So just to recap the websites, if you'd like to learn about the National Trout Unlimited, you can go to www.tu.org. The Columbia Green chapter also has a website, which is www.cgtu.org, to learn more about the Stockport watershed in Columbia and Rensselaer counties and some parts of Massachusetts. You can visit www.stockportwatershed.org. And if you're interested in the Catskill Creek watershed here on the west banks of the Hudson River in Greene, Schoharie, Albany, and Ulster counties, you can friend us on Facebook. I want to thank all of you guys for coming in and spending this time with me and for informing our listeners about the great work that Trout Unlimited does.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA. I'm Liz Lojudis, and you've been listening to an interview with members of the Columbia Green Trout Unlimited on Living Lightly on the Land. Tune in next month on March 5th at 2 p.m. for our next episode of Living Lightly on the Land. And will depart today with one more song by Artie Traum, and this is Fishing Blues. And thanks to everyone for listening, and I hope you have a great month.
One, two, one, two, three.
You're going fishing all the time. My baby's going fishing too. I bet your life, your sweet wife's gonna catch more fish than you would ever do. Many fish bite if they got good bait. Here's a little tale I would like to relate. Many fish bite if they got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. Here's a little something I would like to lay. Any fish bite if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. Baby brother about to run me out of my mind. Said, can I go a-fishing with you? You know I took that bound to the fishing hole. Now what do you think that baby boy to do? He pulled a big fish out the bottom of the pond. He laughed and he jumped cause he was really gone. Nanny fish bite if you got good bait. I'm a-going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. We'll put him in the pot, put him in the pan. Honey, cook him till they're nice and brown. Make a big batch of butter hoe cakes, Chris. Chew those things and chomp them on down. Any fish bite if you got good bait. Here's a little tale I would like to relate. Any fish bite if you got good bait. I'm a-going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. Play that fiddle. I bet you're going fishing all the time. My baby's going fishing too. You bet your life, your sweet wife's gonna catch more fish than you would ever do. Many fish bite if you got good bait. Here's a little tale I would like to relate. Many fish bite if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. Well, I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. I'll play that.